I want you to imagine that you're standing before a grand gathering of the good and the wise, and you've been asked to make a speech about goodness, about beauty, about the meaning of life, about the whole point of history, and about the nature of God. No small task. And what you have as material at your disposal to give such a speech is an account. It's an account of a humiliating and bloody execution in a garbage dump outside a rebellious city in the Middle East. That's what you've got to work with. And your task, then, is to argue that that story is the key to goodness and beauty, the key to the meaning of life, the whole point of history, and the very nature of God. At least that was Paul's position at the church in Corinth, before that populace, this cosmopolitan and sophisticated city of the empire. Paul had to proclaim that this whipped, bloodied, scorned, and derided Jew from Nazareth, of all places, was nothing less than God among us. As Paul himself says, he's got his work cut out for him, because preaching about the cross is a folly, he says, to those who are perishing. Foolishness and stupidity, he calls it. The cross is no way for a messianic reign to end. Yet what else can this preacher do? Because whether it makes sense or not, in the wisdom of God, Paul says, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. So Paul tailors his message, his speech, to the subject matter at hand. He says he chose a foolish art for preaching. When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come proclaiming the mystery of God in lofty words or grand wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were not plausible with words of wisdom, but a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith may not rest on human wisdom, but rest on the power of God. What Paul is saying, I think, is that he talks the way he talks, he lives the way he lives, because what he has discovered about God in this unique story of humiliation and death and crucifixion. God coming as a Messiah, sure, but as a crucified Messiah? It is an oxymoron, a violation of Israel's high expectations for the coming of the King, a messianic liberator. And it's just generally a violation of our notions about how we think God ought to be, how God ought to act, to be really a real God. And Paul says, in order to bring such a scandal to speech, he gave up lofty words and grand wisdom, the stock and trade of sort of a classical speaker. He doesn't avoid the scandal of the story he has to tell, the scandal of the cross. He doesn't attempt to sugarcoat it all in all its absurdity to make it sort of more palatable to his audience. Rather, Paul just limits his subject matter so that he knew nothing among you except Christ and Him crucified. He says he presented his speech in weakness, in fear, in trembling, which is rather sort of peculiar for a public speaker, I should think. He says he does that so that nothing he says will move his hearers. Nothing would convince them other than the power of God found in powerlessness. So he talked the way he talked, he lived the way he lived, in light of the cross of Jesus. We bear witness and believe that God the Father allowed God the Son to be crucified, dead, and buried. It is for God to be pushed beyond the limits of all human expectation or even just basic human help. The cross is the ultimate dead end. And it ends any of our sad attempts at self-fulfillment, human betterment, or just simple social progress. There he hangs on the cross in humiliation and utter defeat. There's nothing to vindicate the work of Jesus. There's nothing to make this story come out right or more palatable except, Paul says, the power of God. I mean, the church has always affirmed that the cross is not only the window to which we really see the true nature of God as an embodiment of suffering love for us, but also a truthful mirror in which we can begin to see ourselves. So a cruciform kind of faith can't but help talk about our failings, our sin. And in fact, Jesus himself is nailed to some wood on the basis of a whole host of otherwise noble human ideals and aspirations, things like law and order, biblical fidelity, or even national security. Which means the cross opens up for us a real and honest dose of our human condition. After Good Friday, we can no longer fool ourselves that we are really deep down, for all intents and purposes, good, nice people who are making some good progress by getting ourselves organized, enlightened, and making something of our own selves. That might be the reason why Paul, rather than base his sort of proclamation of this horrible story on human reason or common sense or some really nice arguments, he says he speaks to them haltingly, hesitantly, in fear and trembling, so that if they actually were to respond, to actually hear, to assent, it would only be done through the power of God. Paul says to them in the church of Corinth that the cross is moria, that is, a kind of moronic foolishness. It's a foolishness to those who are perishing. But for those who are being saved, Paul says it's the power of God. I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Paul goes on to say, where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has God not made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through foolishness to save those who believe. Jews demand signs, Greeks demand wisdom, but we proclaim a Christ crucified. Christ, the power of God, the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. All of that's a lead up to the lesson that Peter read this morning, where here Paul goes to mention this thorn in his flesh, some unspecified disability under which he apparently labored and labored long, a disability that Paul prays multiple times to be relieved from, to be delivered from. Yet apparently he never was. He was forced in his life to bear that burden, whatever it was, without relief, just as Jesus bears his cross without relief. The story of Paul's thorn in the flesh, I think, challenges the usual way in which the contemporary church likes to present itself, right? Too often in the contemporary church, you see the Christian faith being presented as a great unburdening, right? A kind of empowerment that Jesus enables us to rise above the pain in this world. Or a prosperity technique, why the successful are able in their success to be even more successful. But Paul's words today sort of bear, again, this sort of cross cruciform truth that the church has to tell itself over and over and over again. Yes, sometimes Jesus Christ delivers us from our sufferings. And sometimes Jesus thrusts us into suffering. Sometimes Jesus Christ preserves us from pain. But I think more often gives us a way through our pain. Yes, sometimes salvation in Jesus Christ means deliverance from our difficulties. But sometimes it brings about difficulties that we would not have had we not met Jesus in the first place. Paul, the man of unceasing prayer, says he prayed multiple times, 3 times, to be delivered from his thorn in the flesh. But he was not. And through it all, he learned a great truth, that even in pain, even in disappointment, God says to us, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." Here we encounter a cruciform God who's known not only for what God does, but sometimes known for what God does not do. A crucified God is one who doesn't always, in all times, deliver us from our pain, but rather always and at all times stands with us in our pain. So no matter how severe your thorn in the flesh may be, a crucified God has been there and meets you even now in the pain, so that hopefully we too are able to say, like Paul, not that we have been magically delivered or unburdened, but rather that we have too discovered the truth of the divine promise, "My grace is sufficient for you, because my power is made perfect in weakness." That's good news. It means that we do not have to expend our lives in work more significant than that which is usually described by the lies told in the world. To work for a crucified God is a great adventure. It's risky. It's perilous even. But it's wonderful as well. And so much more interesting than mere servility to the wisdom of the world. It is the case that sometimes someone, when confronted with the cross of Jesus, they hear, they respond, and they find themselves liberated from the enslavement of the world's false promises and can take great satisfaction that the promises of God are indeed true, but not true in which the world sees that. That God continues to graciously choose us, use us, to use us what is weak, what is foolish in the world, in order to shame the wise. God who stands with us in our suffering, who makes us perfect in weakness. Thanks be to God. Amen.